And, you know, I don't know how much time we have, and I'll try to stay on script, but somewhat. But 2 years ago, or coming up on 2 years ago, I started this thing called,
can keep talking. I'm recording, so okay. We can talk and go back and officially start.
I
or
just jump right in. Yeah.
No, that's no problem. Yeah. Welcome to the Tri-Town Advice Givers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to bringing the Tri-Town and surrounding area residents the best advice from our brightest minds. My name is Mark Borst, your host, and today we are in the Tri-Town Advice Givers studio in St. John, Indiana, with Kathy Sipple of My Social Media Coach.
I'm, you know, kind of chatty Kathy, but it's just great to have this opportunity to slow down and think about, okay, what patterns are emerging. And if I could say one thing of what I'm trying to do is I've had this really deep passion about the environment, and then I do this thing called social media marketing, and it's been very weird to just have them separate. Weird and not weird.
Right.
But actually in that book, Keys to Conscious Business Growth, it starts to talk about how I integrate those two things because, you know, I also am a student of permaculture. Have you ever heard of permaculture? Mm-mm. It's a portmanteau. I love that word, portmanteau. It's just two smashed up words together, which mean permanent agriculture, but also just permanent culture. So what it is you plant gardens or you make systems that are going to be more regenerative in nature.
Okay.
You follow the energy where it's going and you work with that rather than forcing your will on it. And so, you know, when I popped up and became a social media coach back in February 2009, I was following the energy then. I was take what, you know, life gave to me and just making something with it. It wasn't something I made a business plan and said, hey, and if we have time, I can go back and do that. But now what I'm seeing is that people know the basics. They know what I was teaching back then, right? And so now I think that people kind of need an energy audit a little bit on their social media. So they need to kind of look at what's working, what's not working.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of looking to nature for patterns that will help people in their marketing, if that makes any sense.
It does.
Little bit, kind of?
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to let you talk.
No, that, I mean, you talking is good.
You might have questions, specific questions that you would like to know about.
Yeah, sure. Just to get started, what I kind of do normally is I ask for you to tell a little bit about you as a person before the business side.
Sure.
So if you want to just jump into that and actually just, good morning, Kathy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're off to a good start.
Yeah.
So we could just keep going.
I'm very comfortable, obviously. Yeah. So Kathy Sipple, I live in Valparaiso, Indiana with my husband, John. We're coming up on, this year was our 20th year of being together, knowing each other.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's an accomplishment.
Yeah. And 15 years, I think, is it 15 years anniversary in December? So pretty cool about that. And then we have two fur babies, our rescue black labs, Bodie and Pima, and no kids. I don't want to say childless by choice exactly. We just kind of found each other later in the game.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, we kind of had different lives by then, and we just felt that wouldn't really be fair to a child.
Yeah.
So in any case, So I kind of see myself as more of a universal mother.
Okay.
And that's what kind of makes me okay with it, because I grew up thinking always that I would be a mother and that would be my life. And I had a great family life growing up. I grew up kind of as a Midwestern mutt, I would say. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. I still say Louisville, but I don't have a strong Southern accent, thankfully. But yeah, I've lived in Virginia Beach. I lived in a suburb of Detroit. I lived in Milwaukee. Cincinnati, Ohio, and then I met my husband who was from Chicago.
Okay.
Moved there in 2000, and then through a series of, you know, reasons, we left Chicago and moved to Valparaiso in 2003.
Okay.
So if you kind of do the math of all those averages, you might be able to figure out, this is the longest I've lived anywhere. Everywhere else I've only ever lived like 5-10 years.
Yeah.
And I'll just say I'm 51, you know, so I'm going to own that. I'm over 50
now. There's nothing.
Yeah.
It's a number.
I was kind of like reluctant to say my age for the longest time, and now I feel like, no, you know what? I'm a mother. I'm a universal mother. And what that means is basically there's so many people that need care out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had relatives. My mother-in-law passed last year. She needed help.
Right.
I had a sister who had a brain injury in 2008. She was in a coma.
Oh,
she
wow.
was hospitalized. Like, she needed help.
Right.
And so I kind of feel like these childless couples that are willing to kind of swoop mm-hmm. in and be the pop-up caregivers, like,
It definitely helps kind of, you be able to do that if you don't have something else to take care of. So,
when we made that decision, I said, well, you know, we're not just going to be dinks. Let's put it that way. That has no appeal to me to just, you know, be double income, no kids, and then just who cares about anybody else. I'm like, I'm going to care about, like, everybody else.
Right.
And that's the path I'm going down.
That's cool.
So now I'm just trying to make my business match that.
Yeah.
So I don't become like a professional volunteer, basically, because I'm also not in that category. I do have a strong entrepreneurial streak, so trying to merge those two can be interesting.
Okay. So let's just jump right in right now. So my social media coach, but then you've got a few offshoots from there. And so I think you said already 2009 was about when you started.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the driving factor there at the beginning for you to want to get into that?
Great question. I didn't want to get into that. You know, my sister, who I just mentioned, actually was kind of the trigger for making that change. In 2008, I was a realtor. And, mm-hmm. you know, I see that you're in the real estate biz. I looked mm-hmm. you up a little bit. And I didn't leave real estate because of the market crash. This was actually prior to the market getting really, really, really bad. But it was July 2008. My husband was in real estate with me. And he liked it less than I did. I was like one of the top five producers in my office. And, you know, I thought it was pretty fun. It wasn't always, you know, I'm sure you know, it's not always like a party every day.
Rarely a party every
people
day.
People say, oh, you get to work whenever you want, as long as you like to work all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to make money.
Yeah. You get a buyer and they want to see a house. If you're not there to show them, they're going to call somebody else who responds, you know? So it's like, you know, you're always kind of on the hook. Or or if somebody wants a certain thing and it doesn't exist in the marketplace, you're not a builder.
Sure.
And it's frustrating not to be able to provide a custom solution. So for many reasons, we were, you know, just getting a little burnt out on it. I'd say we were just in a general malaise, might be a good word.
Yeah.
And we bought tickets to see the Dalai Lama.
Okay.
In Madison, Wisconsin. He was going to be Madison, Wisconsin back in July 2008. So we were packing our car at like 4:30 in the morning on a Saturday, getting ready to drive to Madison, and the phone rings. And when does your phone ring at 4:30 in the morning? It's never good, right?
No.
No. It was my sister, my middle sister in Detroit, and she said, I still kind of get choked up when I say this, so hopefully I can get through. But she said that our youngest sister, Julie, had lost consciousness that night, and I shouldn't say start this because I do get choked up. She didn't know if she was going to make it. And if I wanted to
see her. That's scary.
Yeah. If I wanted to see her, that I should probably get there. So we were already packed up, ready to get on 94 and go west. So instead we got on 94 and went east to Detroit. And, you know, we were there and it was just a long, long, scary thing. We found out that she had something called an arteriovenous malformation. Her shortened name is AVM.
Okay.
And it's like a cluster in your brain that's probably there since birth. Mm. And you would never know until it burst. So that's what happened. It's hers burst. And she was not quite 38 years old. She was, you know, perfect health from, you know, she had
right.
a master's
outward
degree,
appearance.
Outward,
yeah,
exactly. So anyway, we stayed by her and, you know, kind of helped her along. Even though she was in the hospital, she was in rehab places. It's just, it's a game changer. You know, there's just a lot that needs to be done. And so she was actually in a coma for a month.
Wow.
And this is just the weirdest thing. Like, until you have this happen and to you or your family member, you just don't think, like, who needs to know that you're in a coma? Like, how would I know how to tell people that she's in a coma?
Right.
Like her boss,
right.
her friends, or her 20th high school reunion was coming up that weekend. And one of her friends said, well, why not just go on her Facebook page and put it there? I was like, what's Facebook? I don't even know what Facebook is.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And she's like, you don't know what Facebook is? Wow, you're really old and not with it. I was like, well, you know, I blogged for real estate and, you know, I was like an email specialist. I was actually teaching other agents in my office about digital marketing, but just hadn't had the need for Facebook, I guess.
Right.
So I was just amazed. I was able to find the group that her 20-year high school reunion had created to talk about their reunion and tell hundreds of people with one post, this is what's going on. And without asking them for help, without any expectation, I just told them, you know, hey, she's not going to be there. And also, since you're in town, possibly now living remotely, you know, she can have visitors. These are the hours, whatever. So just so many great things came of that.
Yeah.
People, they actually did a fundraiser spontaneously and gave us a check to use for some of her expenses not covered by her, you know, her insurance or lack thereof.
Yeah.
People said, hey, you know, you now live outside the area. You're living in Indiana. My parents were living in Cincinnati. None of us lived in Detroit. They're like, where are you guys staying? You know, where are you eating? Do you need help? And so this social network began to form that helped us help her. And honestly, I don't think we could have really done it without like Facebook and also a patient blog called Care Pages. So
that's really cool.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
And Detroit was an interesting backdrop for this because they were probably having a worse time than almost anybody in 2008. I mean, their mayor went to jail that year. GM went bankrupt. You know, it was crazy. Like 22% unemployment. These ad agencies that had always relied on, you know, big clients like the car companies all of a sudden... like, man, we got to figure something else out.
Yeah.
And so in the evenings when I wasn't at the hospital, sometimes I would go to these social media meetups and training. And I was just so impressed with the information, but also just the scrappy attitude of, you know, these Detroit people that are like, hey, we're, you know, we're
trying to survive.
Yeah. We got lemons. We're going to make some lemonade. And they were just among the most innovative people that I heard, you know, coming out and emerging from the social media marketing. So while I was using it for a very personal and practical reason with my sister, I have 30 years of sales and marketing experience. So, you know, I guess in the back of my mind, I'd planted the seed, like, what would I do with this if I was trying to do something not for a loved one, you know? And so luckily, when she was released from the hospital 6 months later, you know, long time, but she had like 500 blog followers. She had a Detroit Free Press photographer and reporter come to her room because they had been reading her blog. And, you know, my sister was like, wow, the paparazzi, what's this? And I thought, okay, she's not really a brand. This is a pop-up thing, a community that came around her and supported her. So, you know, now that I'm kind of safe to go back home, what do I want to do? And I thought, well, I think I could take this information and share it with entrepreneurs here in the region and see if people here could use it. So I just literally started knocking on doors. I went to a place called the Entrepreneur Center in Michigan City.
Okay.
It's no longer there today. But I was like, hey, it's got entrepreneur right on the door.
Yeah.
They seem like my people. And Heather Melnick was the director there at the time. She's like, come right in. I have no idea what you're talking about with this Twitter, but show me. And, you know, bless her heart, you know, she got it. She said, this seems like something that entrepreneurs really could use. And do you think you could put together like a 5-part series and we'll do a free intro? And if that goes well, you can, you know, get people signed up for the rest. So it did go well, sold out. And then, you know, I ended up doing it at the Hammond Innovation Center, you know, all kinds of chambers around here. And today, honestly, my favorite person I'm going to give a shout out to who I think is doing it and loving it is Barbara Kane. Have you ever had Barbara on the show?
I have not. I've reached out to her.
She's awesome.
I've started following her and I haven't reached out to her yet, but she's on my list to reach out to.
She's like just, you know, not that she's so much younger than me, but she's just like a whippersnapper. She just like loves doing the training.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, you know what? If Barbara's got it, then I don't need to be doing it. Like I always want to be doing the thing that's kind of needed and the thing that's a little bit maybe on the edge.
Right.
Until I know that somebody's doing it and it's okay. And I'm happy to do it. If anybody hears me and wants me to do training, I will do it. But Barbara, you know, she just loves it. She loves keeping up with like every last thing.
And that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
For me, I know I get lost in that.
Yeah.
Like I figure one thing out and they're like, oh, that's old by now.
That's antiquated, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I've started to do is I do training for two national companies. And like, for instance, I'll go into Chicago and I'll do a full day of training, or even sometimes it's a 2-day training. And this is a company owned, they're based in London. But they do all the marketing, they fill the class, and then I just have to show up. They do my slide deck. Mm. The benefit there, too, is that they're doing these, you know, slide decks for everybody. So they kind of do the work and tell me, hey, this changed.
Oh, they do the research.
Yeah. So then it makes me sharper for the people that I work with, you know, one-on-one. And so that's cool. But, you know, I got to say, this is where I flipped the switch. I've just been feeling for a while that, like, that just doesn't feel genuinely like me. I don't want to just be able to do training for the people who are able to pay, like, you know, those things I do in Chicago. People pay like $800 each for a day to be there. You know, I know a lot of people around here could not do that. The people right. that I really, really, really want to work with, like, yeah. you know, nonprofits or small business. So in that book, Keys to Conscious Business Growth, it was basically about how to be able to say yes to the people that couldn't do that.
Okay.
And the story that I highlight was really, really fun. It was a guy, his name's Larry Allen, and he has a little cottage business in Valparaiso, Indiana, making oboe reeds. Would you ever think of that as a business?
I mean, there's probably lots of oboe players out there,
yeah,
but...
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, he came to me in, like, June of... I forgot exactly what year. It's probably been 5 years ago now. And he said he was currently principal at a high school, and he had to go back to school in August, I guess, or whenever they go back. It seems earlier and earlier. But he came to me and said, you know, hey, I need to get into this social media thing. Can you help me, you know, build a website, get my social media set up? And then, by the way, I need to be done by August 20th or whatever the date was. I'm like, well, yeah, we can get a website launched if you, you know, get your content together and all that. He's like, no, I mean done. Like, I can't really touch it once the school year begins. I was like, I don't even understand what you mean. Like, that's just not how it works, you know? But I love a challenge. I love somebody saying, can you do this? Or not even can you do this, but this is like what I need to do.
Right.
And then instantly that restriction activates some kind of imaginative, you know, properties in my brain that's like, well, how would you do that? Like, well, you're going to have to get really super helpful and really targeted on your, you know, your target mm-hmm. market, develop content that's helpful, and then automate. He did that, and he got like 70,000 views on his YouTube in the first year.
Wow.
And his business increased fivefold.
I bet.
And he ended up retiring the next
year. Did he really?
He did. Yeah, he said that was going to be his, you know, retirement gig, and he needed to get it up to a certain level in order to do that.
To feel confident in retiring.
Yeah. Yeah. So that made me feel great. That was by no means like my biggest paycheck, but I just thought, you know, this is what I really like, is getting into that almost like a dare. Like, yeah. How would I do
the
this?
Challenge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another favorite was a guy who is an author. That wasn't his main job. He was like, you know, I can't remember exactly what he was, a musician. He did a lot of things. But he had a book called Permaculture Solutions to Climate Change, which I'm kind of a tree hugger, kind of care about climate change. I like permaculture, obviously, I've already stated. Like, I want to help this guy. But he said, I want to write this book, print it, and then give it away for free. And I want to hire you to help me build a website and market it. And I was thinking, follow the money. Like, that's a disaster. You know, I'm going to get money from this really nice guy, and he thinks that somehow building a website equals selling a book. I'm like, those two things are not.
But he said he wanted to give it away free, though.
Yeah, exactly. And he wanted to give it away free. So I'm like, okay, are you independently wealthy? You know, I'm like, this makes no sense. So again, following the energy, and money is energy.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, that does not make sense. What about if you pre-sell the book using crowdfunding, and you're not going to do this book until you know that you can cover your printing cost, and then you're going to build my marketing cost into the crowdfunding, and we're going to be transparent about that.
Right.
And so I said, you know, you can pay me this a little bit of money for the downstroke that will help me show you what is crowdfunding, like how to do a video page, you know, all this and that and the other thing. So again, it wasn't like a big amount.
Right.
But it made me so happy.
It was something you were passionate about too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, if I can do that, then hopefully I can do something that's more repeatable. So anyway, and he gave me the best compliment I've ever had as a marketer. He said, "You took a really permaculture approach to my marketing." Like, I didn't expect that. You know, you just expect somebody that's in marketing would say, here's how much it costs. Give me the money. Here's what you get.
Right.
But I don't like that. I mean, even if I get a big paycheck and it doesn't get somebody what they want,
sure,
that's not
right.
It's not good with me.
Yeah. It's not a long-term thing then.
It's not. It's right. not. And so to that end, actually I developed something about 3 years ago called CoThrive Community. And it's, you know, CoThrive in my mind just helps me do this math really, really quickly to say, who's thriving if this project succeeds? You know, does the client, if that doesn't check, then, you know, it doesn't fit the equation. Does society, hopefully, are they going to be better off if this thing, you know, do they have a clear idea of who they're helping, and do I believe that their product or service is really going to help? And then also me, like, I've got to be in the equation or it's not sustainable for me.
Sure.
And, you know, what was really cool too is once business members started joining this online, you know, business marketing club, they started helping one another, which was great.
Yeah.
So then it's not like I'm the bottleneck. They started to form kind of a network and,
sure,
you know, hey, that looks really cool. Oh, you need that to be shared online? Oh, well, I love that idea. I'll share it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So they started becoming advocates. And while we weren't officially affiliates or, you know, joint venture partners, they were kind of in the baby steps of that.
Yeah.
And so honestly, that's really where I'm going. It's just trying to scale that.
So you said it was a membership type thing? Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't you go into the details of what it entails?
and honestly, I'm going to say it's kind of what it was, because I'm always in a state of flux. Then I had people that wanted to kind of join in and they didn't have a business yet, or even though it was super affordable, they're like, oh, well, I can't afford that, you know? So again, I'm kind of a bleeding heart liberal, I guess, or something, but just like, okay, how could I say yes? Sometimes they didn't need my expertise. They needed one another more than they needed me.
Sure.
So then, 2 years ago, coming up on 2 years ago, I started CoThrive Time Bank. Have you ever heard of a time bank?
The general term, yeah.
The general idea?
Yeah.
Okay. So I tell a lot of people, and they're like, well, that sounds like barter. You know, members trade services with one another. But I think it's so much cooler than barter, because it's really more of a social currency.
Okay.
For instance, is there something that you really enjoy doing outside of work that, like, would you teach somebody to do a podcast, for instance?
I've actually been asked that already.
Okay.
And I definitely would. I mean, I'm not against it whatsoever.
Yeah. And you don't maybe want to do it like for a living, but you would be happy to do it.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. All right, cool.
Yeah.
So I know somebody who's coming to my Time Bank new member orientation tomorrow, Jeremy, who wants to start a podcast.
Okay.
So either, like, right now I'm the only one in the Time Bank that probably could fulfill that, but you join and now all of a sudden, hey, we've got double the people that can make that offer. And frankly, this is much more impressive than, you know, my setup. But Jeremy, let's say, would come here and maybe you'd spend an hour or two with him, you know, showing him tips or something like that. Now you've got 2 hours. Is there something, you know, you being busy in real estate and doing the podcast and doing all the things that you do, that you're like, gosh, it sure would be nice if somebody else would do this for me?
Graphic design. Even some of the social media stuff. Okay. Like, yeah.
All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So Jeremy, as far as I know, isn't maybe a social media expert or graphic designer. So if you were limited to barter, Jeremy would never get that podcast training, right? So that's where barter falls short.
Right.
Or if he said, well, you know, I don't really want the podcasting that much, but you seem to really want a graphic designer, and then people are doing the market value, you know, equation in their head, and then, you know, it can get stymied that way. But in the Time Bank, an hour equals an hour equals an hour. So there is no market value. So Jeremy spends 2 hours with you. You've got 2 hours of graphic design coming your way.
Gotcha.
And then the graphic designer can get whatever they need.
Right.
And so on and so on and so on. And so we're coming up on 100 members now.
Really?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
And last year we were inducted into the Society of Innovators, which was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And they just had their 13th
annual. Yeah, was that last night?
Yeah. And I was there
to
welcome the new inductees. And I'm kind of looking out for the new people because I think, gosh, if more innovative people would get in the time bank, think about all the innovation that could be seeded if people didn't have to think about, am I being a jerk to ask to pick this person's brain? You know,
right.
I don't want to be on the hook to like owe them.
Right.
You don't really have to worry about owing them. You just say, we spent an hour. I honor you for your time.
Right.
You know, and so many people have told me like, oh, can I buy you a cup of coffee? What's, you know, they think that that's like paying it. And I'm like, I don't really need coffee or, you know, what I really need is this, you know?
Right.
So to me, it just seems to honor people's time, let them have choice.
Yeah.
And I feel like if we all did that to, you know, to the extent that we're able to take care of those needs that can be logically addressed by a time bank, great. You know, I'm not out to replace the money economy by any stretch of the imagination, but this is for people who, you know, otherwise would never get it done. Mm-hmm. You know, you just never get that new headshot because you're like, I can't really afford it, or it's not a priority, or or there's a guy that does sailboat rides up at the Hammond Marina, and he is a U.S. Coast Guard captain.
Okay.
He needs to get a certain number of hours anyway under his belt. Right.
Yeah.
And he loves sailing. He's going to go sailing anyway. And so he always used to ask me if I wanted to go sailing, but like last minute, you know, and it just didn't work out. But now somebody's earning hours to help fill his dance card for him. And his sailboat rides have ended up being, you know, one of the most popular
things. I bet.
So that's really, really, really fun. I think it just unlocks a lot of opportunities and excess capacity and, you know, hopefully innovation.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually love the idea. It sounds cool. Well, I mean, just like I said when we started, like I've been videotaping some of these, but I haven't done a thing with the video because I don't have the time or the expertise on it. So.
And you know what? You know who would be great at that? My sister, who had the brain injury. I mean, she actually has a master's degree in communications post brain injury. She's actually not able to return to life as like a marketing director at a bank, how she had been, but she's got all those skills. I mean, she's made documentary films. She does, you know, video editing.
Yeah.
And so now I love it that she can get time.
Yeah.
And she's not going to be beholden to just whatever, you know, transportation services or, you know, if she needs special food or something like that. Like, she's not just going to be at the mercy of whatever she can get through the government. You know, she has skills. And, and there's a book that I love called No More Throwaway People by the guy who's generally acknowledged as the godfather of time banking, Dr. Edgar Kahn. And we're Facebook friends, which I think is so cool. He's like in his 80s, and he's fabulous.
Ed Kahn, you said?
Edgar Kahn, C-A-H-N. But No More Throwaway People, I just love that because there is so much excess capacity. Sounds so like I'm an economist or something, but it's true. I mean, retirees, you retire from, you know, your highfalutin job one day, and then the next day retired. You've got that knowledge all right there.
Right.
You know, maybe you don't want to go into consulting, but what a gift it would be to some new, you know, entrepreneur for you to, you know, just sit down and spend an hour, two, 10, however much you decide.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. There's no requirement that you have to do any certain number of hours per week, per month, per year.
You just do whatever you put in, you take out, basically.
Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah. And then, you know, so retirees, people with disabilities, I've already kind of mentioned, and even young people. I think so many times young people are sold a bill of goods with unpaid internship. Well, what if their employer at least could join the time bank? You know, and I've had unpaid interns, so I'm not saying I'm beyond that. They wanted the experience. I didn't have the money, so we did it.
You know?
But it always didn't feel right, you know. But if I honored them at least with time, then they could maybe go get their resume done. You know, they could build a website. They could get their LinkedIn profile done. They could, you know, get a haircut, get a ride, you know, whatever they want, whatever they need.
And I'll even go one step below that, or not even below it, but in similar fashion, the people that for whatever reason, they drop out of school or do whatever, they all have something that they can do.
Exactly. Everybody has a gift. And that's, that's, you know, really, I guess my business model is I have to keep stripping it down until I don't have a barrier to be able to work with everybody being able to share their gift. Because right. I feel like if I don't do that, it's not a co-thrive kind of model, you know? Right. So the time bank definitely helps.
You said it was two separate entities, though. The co-thrive is one thing, and then the co-thrive time bank is an additional thing?
Kind of.
Or is it all one now?
It's, you know what? I was really hoping I'd be able to come on here and say, my new website is launched, and it's totally all clear now. It's getting there. I just last night was having trouble with DNS, you know, servers, migration, whatever. But I will say, hopefully, by the time somebody's listening to this, if you go to kathysipple.com, I am really trying to make sure, and that's Kathy with a K, so KathySipple.com. I tried as hard as I could to make it a little more, like being a directional signage online,
okay.
to be more user-friendly.
Yeah.
Because I teach this in my classes. I'm like, if you're not tagging, categorizing, you know, being a good way shower online, you could have all the greatest content in the world, and instead of being spammy or being a marketer, I'm like, it's just not very polite, you know, to say, hey, I've got information for you and let me just hide it behind like five different websites, whatever. But if you go to kathysipple.com, hopefully it kind of explains. But there are three different little adventure paths that you can go on. One is for a business owner. And if you, you know, want to have a website or you need help getting your social media in order, then that's kind of you go down one little rabbit hole. People have been saying, you really go down a lot of rabbit holes. So I'm just leaning into that and even playing around with some Alice in Wonderland stuff.
You know? There you go.
There might or might not be a white rabbit or a red queen that like meets you along the way to go down a rabbit hole. But you go down that path and, you know, you're going to go mostly on a business track, but then you'll have some opportunities to say, you know, hey, can't afford that. Here's some options. Like maybe you want to try time banking or maybe you want to try, you know, this other model. Or if you just care about the environment, because really my podcast is called 219 Green Connect. It's had zero revenue model for all these years. And it was just about me connecting the green dots here in Northwest Indiana because I felt like they needed to be connected. I would meet people that had like a green business, Recycled Granite. They're right here in St. John. Have you ever heard of them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Julie Rizzo. I just thought that was the coolest business. Has she ever been on the show?
She hasn't.
She hasn't? Oh,
yeah.
I love it. She, you know, she really took scrap granite and made cool backsplash tiles and pavers and things like that. So she's kind of doing her thing, and she's known, I guess, within the green, you know, building industry a little bit. But then she wouldn't necessarily know people that are doing native plant landscaping or, you know, just all different little people that were in their different pods.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh,
and all
gosh.
Kind of separated.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm all about like the cross pollination. I'm like, mm-hmm. let's bring you together and you together. So at least if you have it on air, as you know, I love what you said in your magazine too about the storytelling and just, you know, putting it out there in this long form is so much more rich and nuanced, and you can explore so many things that would not even make sense in writing.
Right.
You know? So anyway, I did that. And then there's a middle path that's basically like, hey, maybe you want to integrate these two things in some way. Maybe you're a business that cares about going green, or maybe you're a consumer that cares about, you know, shopping at green businesses or whatever. So in the time bank, I would say more or less that's the way, that's the place where these things can kind of mix together. It's neither business nor consumer. It's really everybody. You know, does that make any sense?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
So Co-Thrive is alive in my brain, but the membership model, it kind of wasn't working. So I'll tell you what I'm in the middle of transforming that to be. I'll just say I was charging $30 a month and I was giving like 6 hours of training time per week. Like, I loved these people. Everybody in my business was like, that's insane. That's crazy. You know, what are you making? Like, you would make more if you worked at Taco Bell. I'm like, well, not if I scale it. You know,
right.
if you're like a gym, right? I mean, you wouldn't say to a gym owner, you're only charging $20 a month.
Right.
That's crazy. That's not enough to pay for the overhead. Well, you don't have one member. You hopefully have a lot of members. You know?
Right.
But I was getting a lot of the same members coming back over and over and over and asking for, like, how do I send an email? Or just something like mind-numbing. And I'm like, man, I'm pretty patient, but evidently I'm not that patient, you know?
So you weren't taking your advice or whatever and digitally archiving it anywhere to, like, point them back
sometimes,
to, hey, look at this?
Sometimes,
or?
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes, but, like, the people that did not, I mean, I'm kind of...
No, I
get
it.
Getting a little crazy with how to send an email, but it wasn't too far off that. You know, the people that didn't know that could not even, like, you know, be encouraged to go find that,
right,
you know, video.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
So I have recently found a solution that, you know, I've kind of been vetting for the last, like, 2-3 weeks, and I'm building, this is why I'm rebuilding my own website on their platform, as I'm kind of kicking the tires. I wanted to see if it's really as good as I thought it would be. And it, you know, I thought I would kick the tires for like a day or a week and then be like, hey, I'm either recommending, not recommending. These people go really, really deep. They're super organized and they have a deeper bench than I do. So they were covering all the same things that I was doing, but I think better. And they have a university level account that, you know, I think kind of blows what I was doing away for $50 a month. So guess what? My new job is going to be connecting people to that instead.
Gotcha.
You know? So yeah. I don't say I've killed it. I've just delegated without having any employees.
Right.
And in the issue of, you know, full transparency, I'm going to be an affiliate for them.
Right.
Because, you know, why should I cannibalize my base? I'm now going to be a referral partner.
Yeah.
And I will help people, you know, with their onboarding or whatever they need.
Right.
Through the time bank. Hopefully.
There you go.
If they don't want to pay me, you know, if they don't have the budget for that, at least honor my time.
Right.
You know, if there's some gap that you don't get or you don't understand or you need a connection there,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm just really trying to catch the energy that's out there because I can't stop helping people. But if I want to help a lot of people, then I need to change something to make it scalable.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah.
Because otherwise, yeah,
well,
professional
and you,
volunteer.
You actually said it mm-hmm. a while ago. It's one, the one-to-many model. The one-to-one doesn't work.
No.
You need definitely one-to-many.
Not for me. Not for me. It yeah. really doesn't. And I will give a shout-out, too. I'm not an affiliate for this person. If she had an affiliate program, I'd totally sign up for it. But her name is Shawn Driscoll, S-H-A-W-N-D-R-I-S-C-O-L-L. And unfortunately, she's not in the area. She's a Detroit gal. But she has this thing called the Trailblazer Quotient, and it's an online quiz that you can take or assessment, not like a silly Facebook quiz, but really one that helped me figure out why am I not like every other consultant that says, you know, here's what you need to charge this high rate, and, you know, here's just how you do it. But her quadrants basically are intimacy, which is more of a one-on-one model. It works for some people.
Sure.
If you're going to charge a lot, that's
yeah.
fine. I just know I'm not wired that way. I'm too like Mother Teresa. And or there's education. So if you want to do a downloadable ebook and, you know, sell your information, I've kind of tried that. And honestly, with social media, it changes so fast. You'd be writing
right.
a new version of the ebook like every week, and that would be maddening to me. So those were the two quadrants I was playing in, and I was just beating my head against the wall. But then what I found out through her is that there are two other quadrants, inspiration and innovation. And those are my people. Those are my skills.
Yeah.
But I never thought of that as a business, you know?
Right.
I'm just like, well, what am I going to be, like a minister or something, you know? I don't want to do that. I am a business person. But she actually gives really, really good models of how to make that
yeah.
into a business. And so since I found those quadrants, it's been great.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've been able to get.
And sometimes that's what it takes is someone else to say, hey, don't, you're looking over here. You need to look over here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, unfortunately, we don't recognize our own gifts very easily. You know, there's one thing I really like to do for people called a LinkedIn profile peer review. Because I think LinkedIn is one of the easiest, you know, no cost attraction marketing things that you can do for yourself is, you know, you got all, it's the number one place for professional networking. Use that summary area to say who you are and who you want to help. And so many people, they either just think, oh, it's only for people looking for a job or whatever, or they just don't know how to talk about themselves or see what it is that they offer and that they do, you know?
Yeah.
So that is one thing that I still love doing for people, and you can find out about that on my website.
Okay.
Yeah, so the energy audit, the profile review, those are things that I just feel like, you know, I'm in and out. I can still help a lot of people, you know, but I'm probably not your person if you want your social media done for you. I'm like, bless the hearts of the VAs and the other people that successfully do that. But to me, that goes back to storytelling, mm-hmm. you know, who's going to tell your story better than you?
Right.
I mean, maybe if you're a really intuitive VA or somehow you've got a way to download, you know, that info, that's great.
And that's definitely a challenge. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's very time consuming, mm-hmm. but it is something that you can't really pass off to anybody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be personal to be effective, I think.
Right.
Like otherwise, it's just canned, and you can kind of tell that,
yeah,
the canned stuff. So
exactly. Like, so people hear my title and they think, oh, social media, she's the one I want to do my social media for me. Like, I had a motivational speaker author in Chicago that wanted me to ghost blog for him. And I'm like, you're a motivational speaker. People pay money to hear you speak. Like, what on earth could I possibly write and have it be credible as your voice? But the formula that we came across that actually is very similar to Larry the Oboe Guy is I would you know, go into Chicago and spend maybe half day with him, 6 hours, and we would just videotape little clips of him. I would give him a subject. I would say, you know, Bob, transformational leadership, go. And he would have something brilliant to say in the drop of a hat. He would just, right, I'd capture it. And then we would just move on. So then I would end up with these little clips of, you know, like 2-3 minute video,
yeah,
that could be transcribed.
Sure.
They could be, you know, video blogged with a transcription. And that's what Larry did too. He just, yeah, sat there and said, okay, like, here is my end user. It is a junior high or high school musician.
And he was doing it all on video?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I've been that band director trying to direct an entire group of kids, and usually there's like one oboe player or two, you know, they're not the most popular instrument. So, you know, the band director's over there with the flutes or the saxophones, and the oboe kid's like figuring it out, you know. So he said, if I could be the adjunct teacher of the band director, then I just need to find the band director and tell them what I do.
Mm.
And give them these instructional videos that would help, you know, this kid that's kind of off on,
right,
their own. And then he wasn't selling the reeds directly. He would just have to refer to the stores that sold the reeds. So he knew if he told the band director, they're already telling the kid where to go for the instrument.
Right.
They're going to tell him that too, right? Or the kid's going to find it because he's going to mention it on the video. Here's where you find the reeds.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. I didn't know if it would work, but the numbers say it worked.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think just trying to be super helpful and figure out how to help a lot of people with whatever amount of time you've got,
right,
and whatever your skills are, you know.
And I think just in the podcast world, Tim Ferriss and...
I love Tim Ferriss, yeah. Gary Vaynerchuk.
And Vanner.
I love him, yeah.
So things they both say, mm-hmm, is you can give away 99% of your, mm-hmm, content for,
mm-hmm,
free.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people that want that next 1% that you're going to make all your money off of. Mm-hmm. And if you keep giving away that 99%, you'll make a lot of money off,
right,
that 1%.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just was like stumbled upon, you know, a video last night from a guy, I think it's smartblogger.com.
Okay.
And I shared this with my sister because she happens to now be in a wheelchair, and she has a whole Facebook group, you know, that's about empowerment for people, you know, with a disability. And this guy is in a wheelchair. He's on, I think, a respirator, and he's, you know, he said his blog's made him over $1 million.
Now that you said that, I have seen him, yeah.
And he's just so straight up, you know, easy to follow,
yeah,
you know, no nonsense. I'm like, man, I love this guy. You,
yeah,
know, I just love that people are succeeding that don't look like, you know, MBA or, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's almost like the people that have that mindset, like, I deserve an audience. Mm-hmm. Well, those people drive me a little crazy. Like the person that left their corporate job and they became a health coach because they spent $10,000 on this and they were told they're going to make 6 figures. They're just like, well, I'm going to make 6 figures. And I'm,
right,
like, okay, well, what's your plan? What are you giving?
Right.
And I'm not going to say categorically all those people are like that, but they seem to have this expectation. Well, I come to the marketplace with all of this corporate experience, and so therefore, somehow that's just automatically translatable to right. everybody, like lining up to pay you money. And I'm like, okay, what you got paid at your job, like if you didn't build your network,
right.
that's just not how right. it works. You know?
And not only built your network, mm-hmm. but related to your network and have a relationship mm-hmm. with that network. I mean, right. that it goes back to the story and the relationship and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you're in a paid position and people have to like you because you're in that paid position, does not translate automatically right. to...
And I don't want to put the kibosh on anybody that's thinking, you know, of leaving their corporate job and, you know, doing something different. I just think build your network before you need it, mm-hmm. hopefully organically and, you know, following your passion. But, like, leave some digital evidence of that passion before you just decide to pop up and have a business about yeah. it, you know?
Yeah, Gary Vee always talks about that kind yeah, of stuff. Like, yeah. if you've got a 9-to-5 and you want to do something else, don't leave your 9-to-5.
Right, yeah.
Do the other thing. Mm-hmm. I think he always says work 9-to-5 at your regular job, and then you come home from 6 to 2 a.m. or yeah. something.
Yeah, he doesn't really seem to sleep a lot, but
yeah.
I do enjoy him. And he had something new this year. I think it was new this year. It was like an eBay challenge.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he's done that a couple of times,
has
I
he?
Think.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, so I started on that, and I didn't hit the goal that I set for myself, but I made, you know, close to... You know, I think I shouldn't brag because I can't remember my numbers. But I mean, it was in the thousands of dollars, and that was yeah. just in January, February, like when I was slow. Like, that's a great way to shift your energy, mm-hmm. too. If you're an entrepreneur and things are
right.
not, you know, as fruitful in one regard, I just mm-hmm. love having that flexibility. And then
yeah.
back to the time bank, because I'm obsessed. You know, all of a sudden, if you have a gap as an entrepreneur, instead of panicking, you could be earning hours, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you say, oh, I don't have time because this right. month is my busy time. Well, if you find yourself in a lull, all of a sudden you could be helping a bunch of people. Maybe you're not getting paid, but your network is growing. People are experiencing you. You're getting all kinds of goodwill. And then, you know, when you get busy, now you got somebody that might cut your grass for you or cook your dinner or clean mm-hmm. your house or whatever, you know, do your graphic design, whatever the heck you need.
Yeah.
So I think it's a way to fill your tank.
Yeah. I every time you bring it up, I love the idea.
Good.
I mean,
good. I do talk about it kind of a lot. And,
yeah,
what's his name? Don from NIBSCO. I can't think of his last name right now. Economic development guy. I met him through the Society of Innovators, and he actually said, the time bank makes my head hurt. I do not get it. I don't get why you think it's about economic development. But I'm like, okay, there's no money, but everybody is, you know, running their business or, you know, holding down a job to make money. If you all of a sudden can have a lot of your needs taken care of without money,
right?
What else does that open up? You know, again, right. in terms of innovation, in terms of, you know, people actually have more to spend on disposable income when their basics are taken care of, right? Or they're just happier because they can do these fun things like a sailboat ride and they're not spending money,
right.
you know? So it's like the shadow economy. Again, I'm not out to do away with capitalism. I actually majored in economics in college. So I'm good with all of that. But it's just like, how do we butt up against that to,
right.
to take advantage of people's excess capacity?
And I think also it just gets you out in whatever you're good at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to call it practice, but mm-hmm. it's practice. Like,
and that's,
you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we had a woman from the Time Bank software come out from Portland, Maine, when we started last year. And she said, you know, sometimes people will look upon time banking as a little bit disparaging, like, oh, they're amateurs. And do you know the Latin root word for amateur? Ama, amas, you know, it, love.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you're doing it for the love
right.
of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what's wrong with doing it for the love of the thing? You
yeah.
know, just because you're not doing it for the money of the thing, you know, some things, like somebody taking my picture, for instance, I just had a photo shoot last week and it felt really, really good to have that photographer doing it for the love of the thing.
Right.
And for somebody who really knew me on a different level than just going into a, you know, and I, nothing against professional photographers that charge for it. That's great too. But I became friends with her. She knew me in a whole different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like I haven't gotten the pictures yet, but I have a feeling they're going to be, you know, among my most authentic pictures ever.
Right. Because it brings the real out.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Totally. Yeah. So anyway, obviously I have my hands in a lot of different things.
And hey, that's good. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people that rely on one stream of income are the ones that, when that falters, then they are scrambling.
Yeah. And, you know, so I guess I'd like to be a source of inspiration for people that have an idea, you know, either me helping them launch it or somebody in the time bank, because I'm in marketing, so I've kind of attracted a lot of marketers as well. And, you know, there are people that can say, hey, I only offer this for people that can't pay, or I'll do a limited amount of hours, you know, because they need to make money too. We don't live in the time bank economy as yet. So it's not like we're all dousing our businesses to take part in that. But
Right. Yeah. And it's even just on the giving back side. I mean, there's a lot of gratitude that can happen inside there.
Yeah. And you know, you bring up a point too. Like, there's some people that I think they're just so used to being givers, that thinking about getting something back feels bad. So if you're one of those people, think about this. You could double down on your volunteer hours, because the good thing that you're doing, that you've just earned time for, let's say you have a neighbor that has something bad happen, like cancer or job loss or fire, or, you know, the house burns down. You could actually now give them the 30 hours that you banked, and they could take those hours and say, well, we need a painter, we need a landscaper, we need whatever they need,
right. You
know, babysitter, transportation. So instead of you just doing that thing and feeling good, like, aren't I a good person? I don't want anything for that. Well, you're kind of leaving money time on the table. You know, you could actually take that and re-gift it again if you don't need it, want it, whatever.
Right.
But I do think people are going to need it eventually, you know? Mm-hmm. So it is really important, the giving and receiving, because if you've ever been in a situation, like my family was in Detroit, I mean, we were used to always being the givers. All of a sudden, you know, I mean, we weren't literally homeless. We had homes. They just didn't happen to be geographically proximate to the place where we were trying to live for 6 months.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden we were relying on, you know, the kindness of friends, not really strangers, but friends to say, hey, you know, my parents are in Norway for 2 weeks. You can stay at their house. Or, hey, you know, I'm a recent empty nester. You can use my spare, you know, bedrooms or whatever. But all of a sudden, you know, we were like, man, how would we be living? How would we be able to help my sister right now if we didn't have this network, you know? So I think putting it in, again, when you don't need it, is really, really good and allows you to do big, bold things that seem like you're just popping up out of nowhere. But you're really not. You've planted so many seeds, and, you know, you've worked the soil. You know, back to my little gardening metaphor, if you spend a lot of time on the soil and you plant really quality seeds, you're going to get some really great results.
Yeah. Karma at its peak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I am a believer in karma, but I think it's just so literal, you know, like looking to nature again for examples. And, so I am doing wild edible hikes now. And I even have had the idea, could I do a nature hike for business people and just like point out, you know, business analogies or something like that, like with composting. You know, you go up and walk in the Indiana Dunes State Park, and they even have a big story that, or big sign that says, do not remove rotting logs. You know, they're contributing to the forest floor and everything.
Right.
So it's so verdant and lush there. And so instead of just saying, scrapping that project and get rid of it, move on, like, what did you learn from it? Did you let it compost? You know, is there some beauty? Is there some richness? Or, you know, like your LinkedIn profile again. To me, that's kind of like your soil, right? If you have to find a joint venture partner, you've made no connections, then all of a sudden you're just as good as like Googling for an answer. But if you planted the seeds of connection on LinkedIn, then all of a sudden you've got the ability to go two or three levels deep in that soil and look at your network's network and even their network's network, you know? And then all of a sudden you're proceeding with some clues instead of just going in blind.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So biomimicry, I guess, is what you call it. Just, you know, mimicking nature's patterns and taking the wisdom that's there to apply it toward business, toward life, toward anything.
Yeah, the sciences repeat themselves in many facets.
They do.
Yeah.
And there's a favorite TED Talk of mine. I'm a big fan of the TED Talks. Joanna Samard, I think is her name. She's a professor, maybe doctor out of British Columbia. She did a TED Talk about how trees communicate.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
No.
It has been proven by science that trees use something below the ground called the mycelium network. It's actually the little strands of, you know, fibrous connections that mushrooms lay down.
Okay.
Like when you pull up a mushroom, I don't know if you do that. I do that because I hunt mushrooms. But when you pull up a mushroom, you're no more picking the mushroom than you would be saying, I picked an apple tree if you picked an apple.
Okay.
Like there's a whole huge plant below.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. 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 So that's the thing. Like a lot of mushrooms can pop up and seemingly very, very quickly out of nowhere. But it's not out of nowhere. It's right. It's the network that they've laid down, you know? So in the forest, they call it the wood wide web. Isn't that cute? And it's been shown that trees can actually pass electrical signals through the mycelium network. So that was literally our original template for the internet. And I just think that's so cool.
It is.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And these mother trees, like this is kind of my aspirational job coach, I guess, is a mother tree. Like, they don't hoard their resources. They don't just say, like, I'm a tree. I'm going to just kind of live over here and be my own business, you know, not going to look out for anybody else. They're constantly, like, checking out those electrical signals, and they can actually find their young, and they'll send them nutrients through that wood-wide web as well.
Hmm.
So I just think that's so great.
Yeah.
So the way that I put that together in my, you know, crazy little green head is, you know, affiliate marketing. Joint venture partners, like this is really the way it needs to be, because like social media marketing as a broadcaster, unless you have a really big budget, good luck with that. It works so much better if you have people and you have stories and you have testimonials and you have, you know, partners that will take and cross-pollinate and help you get your message out. But you trying to do it alone, just you saying you're great, good luck with that, you know.
Yeah, no, or, I completely
are
agree.
Are you trying to, and I'm not saying you would ever do that, because you're, you know, just by virtue of you hosting this podcast, you're being a father tree, I suppose.
There you go.
But, you know, or saying like, hey, I need these resources, you know, it comes back to that karma thing. It's like, really? Okay, we haven't seen any resources coming out, so, you know. Yeah, so I think Gary Vee and Tim Ferriss, all those people that say give away 99%, you know, you get that mycelium network going, and you get a lot of help going out, then it's going to be just natural for it to come back.
Yeah. Mycelium network?
Mycelium, yeah. Let's see. M-Y-C-E-L-I-U-M.
Okay.
I think that looks right. Yeah. But I just think it's fascinating. I mean, there's just so many great lessons in nature that I think if we as humans are patient enough and quiet enough and humble enough to like learn from looking at these systems that have been around a really long, long time, longer than us, very successfully, that, you know, it's kind of a nice little break.
They have a proven track record.
Yeah. Have you ever seen those short videos that say Nature RX?
I don't think so.
They are a parody on the drug commercials.
Oh,
they're like, ask your
that.
Doctor if nature's right for you.
No, Nature RX.
Yeah, they're like, side effects may include, you know, smiling for no reason, or, you know, it's just so fun. But they're like, you know, do you dream of the apocalypse and you just can't wait? You know, are you a manic depressant? You know, nature might be good for you.
That's funny.
I wish I could remember it exactly, but there's a series. There's at least like two or three, and they're just so funny.
Yeah.
I think, you know, who wouldn't that be good for? Just to get out. I mean, the oxygen that's
available.
Well,
just available. The vitamin D alone, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's all kinds of phytochemicals that are available from the leaves. And then, you know, I wrote a different little ebook, or it's a chapter in one of these co-written books called Gifts of Grace and Gratitude. And I wrote about wild edibles. My editor is from New York City, and she's constantly like, you want to write what? You know, this is a book that's kind of spiritual. I'm like, well, mushroom hunting is spiritual for me. Like, and I write about when I was doing one of these trainings in Chicago, and, you know, they pay pretty well. It's not a bad gig. But I got there early, and I'm crossing Daly Plaza right in the loop, and they have their farmer's market. You know, not sure which days they have it, but it was a day when they had the farmer's market. And I saw one farmer. He had a huge, just huge maitake mushroom Have you ever seen a maitake mushroom?
I probably have, but
this one was massive. And at that point, I had been too afraid to ever pick one, even though I thought I knew what they were. I wasn't yet licensed. I said, could I just like buy a little petal off of this because I want to try it? He said, oh, no, ma'am, this sold before the market even opened to a chef. I said, you know, how much? I'm just curious. $400 for one mushroom. And I'm thinking, okay, I just took the South Shore train from Chesterton, took me an hour and a half, you know, and then from my house, Valpo to there. It's kind of a haul. And then obviously same thing back at night.
Right.
They're paying me better than that mushroom. But I'm thinking like, I would have rather just stayed at the dunes, gone out in the woods, found a mushroom, and like, how much happier would I be getting exercise and all that? So I actually have started this thing that's one of our revenue streams in the time bank where we butt up against, you know, capitalism. Last year, we had several different chefs ask if I could source mushrooms for a farm-to-table dinner. And we've actually been asked again this year to do that. And I can't, with reliability, be able to just produce mushrooms on the fly. You know, they don't work that way.
Right.
But if I have a mycelium network of people that I can say, hey, have you seen me? You know, and I show them a picture of the mushroom that I need, I can either give them time bank credit or I can share, you know, the bounty that we get through, because the chef pays for it. So this is you know, funding that actually comes to us. So we had like three chefs that we did that for last year. And I do hope to scale that. Yeah, I think that would be really fun. So,
and they're just wild mushrooms?
Yeah, they're just wild mushrooms. Now, there are thousands of kinds of mushrooms, so I'm not at all recommending that people go hog wild and just start consuming anything you see in the forest that looks like a mushroom. But as a licensed wild mushroom hunter, I think I'm certified to inspect like 17 different kinds. So there are like giant puffball mushrooms, chicken of the woods, maitake, lion's mane. There's several. But they're delicious. They're really, really good. And I'm not trained well enough, or I want to say I'm not licensed to license other people. But if, you know, I show people what they look like, I can train them to be satisfied, to find it for themselves, to eat for themselves.
Right.
And if they want to sell it to a chef or to a farmer's market, then they do need somebody with a license to kind of stamp it. It's like I'm a notary public for mushrooms. I stamp it and say, yep, those are morels. Yep, that's a chicken of the woods. Yep, that's a maitake. You
know? Just so they don't sell them something that's potentially poisonous.
Because that would be bad for everyone,
you know,
or even deadly. So there's some things that you don't want to mess with. So but that's just one idea.
That's interesting.
Mushrooms are my spirit guides, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So you're doing that this weekend, you said? You're going on a little tour, bringing some people along?
Yep. I'm doing that in Valparaiso from 1 to 3 p.m. And, you know, people might look out there and say, there's barely any leaves on the trees. Like, what could we possibly be eating, you know, right now? That's why I want to do it now, because I just think it's so fun. There are all kinds of things. I said, we're going to find at least 5, if not 10, wild edibles, you know, and there's some that you can find year round. Think about it. Before there was Strachan Van Teele.
Right.
Before there was Meyer, you know.
Right.
I'm pretty sure people were eating, you know, like the Native Americans that were here, they were eating. So they knew some things.
Right.
And I just think it's kind of empowering to get back and just know that, hey, I could go and if I had to, I could survive, you know, and even thrive. I mean, my dream would be to have a forest to table dinner instead of just a farm to table where the mushrooms like the oddball thing, but to really celebrate, you know, the gifts of the forest.
Cool. And cool.
If everything would have worked out right, I was going to like bring you a wild mushroom today. I stopped by a spot where I had been told that I could find some giant puffballs, and it wasn't immediately obvious to me. I didn't know if it was going to be a drive-by mushroom hunt. I was like, I don't want to be late. But I thought that would be pretty fun to be able to put down. I mean, a giant puffball like that big.
Really?
Yeah. It looks like a you know, huge volleyball or something.
So just in a general, what kind of general area would you find something like that in?
Well, that's a good question, but like wooded generally.
Okay.
Moisture, you know, so it's not even aware all the time, but weather dependent and seasonal too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would love to show more people that and get them to be part of my little you know, mycelium network. I think that would be a fun thing. So yeah, I'm doing that on Sunday. And then tomorrow, I'm doing a Time Bank new member orientation. You don't have to be a new member to show up. It's just at the Valpo Public Library from 9 to 11, the one on Jefferson. And what I really want to do there, too, is to say, hey, if you're coming to the Wild Edible Hike tomorrow, duh, you can be getting that for time credit. You know, if $25 feels a little heavy for you, join the Time Bank for $25 and go on as many mushroom hikes as you want, you know? So, again, it's like, it's not an either or, but a both and. It's right. Like, I'll take money if people either don't get time banking or they don't, you know, have the time, quote unquote. That's fine. You know, I need money sometimes just like everybody because the gas station doesn't take time bank credit so far. Yeah. But anyway, it's fun. I just have so much fun innovating and really it's not anything new. It's going back to the very oldest technologies that have ever been there, but now right. with benefit of social media technology, it mm-hmm. gives a way to tell that story and share in a way that wasn't obviously available when it came around the first time.
I mean, honestly, all ideas are already all great innovative ideas are already there. It's mm-hmm. just taking something and tweaking it sometimes minusculely. Mm-hmm. And people are going to benefit from it. So someone's exactly. willing to pay you for it. So,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Cool. So just to kind of wrap up, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Well, they can visit my new website, kathysipple.com.
Okay.
And my phone is 219-405-9482. Or email. Email's great. I get email on the phone. So you can send it to Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, at cothrive.org. So that's co like together and thrive, like everybody thriving together. No hyphen.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.